the most of your Walt Disney World vacation.
The top six tributes to Imagineers in Walt Disney World. Hi, I'm Herb Leibacher, and welcome to episode number 104 of the World of Walt podcast. Make the most of your Walt Disney World vacation for the week of January 15th, 2017. This is the podcast for Walt Disney World fans. Whether you're planning your next trip or just enjoy reliving a little bit of Disney magic. Today, the podcast is sponsored by Ear to Their Travel. If you're planning a trip to any Disney destination, give Phil at Ear to Their Travel a call. Phil is a former Disney cast member, so he really knows how Disney works. He can help you plan all the details of your next vacation at no extra cost to you, while making sure you get the best deal on your trip. You can reach Phil at eartotheirtravel.com. The wonder and the magic of Disney parks actually takes a tremendous amount of time, effort, and money to create. The things that Disney does aren't the sort of things that you can buy off the shelf. Disney Imagineers of all kinds, from engineers to artists, from landscapers to accountants, are the folks who work tirelessly behind the scenes to create the experiences that we love. Sometimes Disney will honor these folks that help to create the Disney magic. So today we're going to take a look at the top six tributes to Imagineers in Walt Disney World. To help me explore this topic, I'd like to welcome a guy who is actually Imagineering his own house, Phil Gramlich. Phil, welcome back.
Thank you, Herb. Yeah, that's true. We're working on putting it. I don't know if I mentioned this on your podcast before or not, but we're actually, my wife and I are working on building our own Trader Sam's in our garage.
Which I can't wait to see one of these days. And tell me what sort of things you're doing to turn your garage into a Trader Sam's.
So we had a pretty large size garage in our house that we moved into over the summer. So the back end of it, I turned into my own little podcast. Podcast. You would think I'd be able to say it. We record these things all the time. Podcast recording studio. An office for myself. The three quarters of the garage we're turning into a Trader Sam's. So basically what we're doing is we're building a bar. We're putting it, you know, it's also going to serve as a media room. So behind the bar is going to be a pretty big TV. The bar is going to feature, I bought on eBay tiki stools from the 1970s from an actual 70s tiki bar in Manhattan.
Nice.
Yeah, we're putting the dark wood paneling on the walls, the bamboo around the bar itself, and I've been collecting, I got a couple of hanging lights. One is a crab trap light. Another one is a rope, like an old nautical rope that they made, that I had someone make into a light fixture for me. And I've been collecting crazy off-the-wall things from eBay, from Etsy, like ships, wheels, oars, you know, blueprints of the Nautilus. I have a few things from the Jungle Cruise, a few things from the Enchanted Tiki Room, Tiki Masks, that kind of thing. So, yeah, it's very much going to be a kind of a combination of Trader Sam's in Disneyland and Trader Sam's in Walt Disney World. So, yeah, it's, you might think I'm a little insane, but that's why I am in the job that I'm in.
So I was kind of hoping that you were going to get the stools that you could control from behind the bar where you can make them sink down. Are you going to do that? Right?
I wish I could. Our house is like a slab on a slab.
Nah.
So I think that would mean we had to like drill into the ground or something. So that we're not going to be doing that. But that is one of my favorite effects in Trader Sam's. I think I told you that I said it on your podcast the one time I was talking to a friend of mine, and over the course of like an hour, I realized, and I'm not a very tall guy, but I realized he had about 6 inches on me on the stools. And I realized, hey, my stool has slowly been sinking the entire time I've been here. So yeah, that's a lot of fun.
Well, Phil, that's why they have jackhammers. You know, you can take care of that foundation issue. That's not a big deal.
I'm sure my township would love it. And so my hard hat in my garage.
And so my other question is, do you plan to serve Nautilus drinks for $52 a pop?
That's a good one. Yeah. You know, what's funny is I have a bunch of the glasses, the collectible ones from Trader Sam's, but I don't have the Nautilus. And I've been debating, because I want to display them, you know, like behind the bar. And I've been debating, do I just bite the bullet and get one on my next trip? Or do I just go on eBay and spend, you know, $30 to buy the glass? I don't know. I have to figure that one out.
When you have to think about budgeting for a particular drink or a glass, then it kind of makes you wonder, doesn't it?
Well, you do have to think about that. That's like, you know, a quick service dinner for my family and I. So,
yeah.
You know, it's, my wife might kill me she would kill me if I didn't share it with her. Let's put it that way. If I got it myself, she would kill me. But if they're big drinks, I don't think one person could take one down.
Yeah, you probably do need to share that one, or you need to plan to sleep there overnight. So
yeah, that's true.
All right, top six tributes to Imagineers at Walt Disney World. And Phil, we are over to you for number one.
Okay, so my first one is, let's see, I'm trying to think which one. I only have three. Okay. When you're walking down Main Street USA, right, you know about the famous, in the Magic Kingdom, by the way, you know about the windows on Main Street. Many of the windows have tributes on them to the legends and Imagineers that were instrumental in building not only Walt Disney World, but the Disney Company and the history of the Disney Company and everything. So I really like one, and it almost doesn't belong at Magic Kingdom, because I feel like this one is a Main Street and Disneyland type window, but these guys have one out there as well. And it's Ub and Don Iwerks. It's their window on Main Street USA in the Magic Kingdom. For you guys who don't know, Ub Iwerks was Walt Disney's partner back in the 1920s when he came up with Oswald the Lucky Rabbit and eventually Mickey Mouse. His son Don Iwerks worked at Epcot and in the Magic Kingdom. He worked on the CircuitVision 3D films, O Canada and the Wonders of China. So they both have, they're both on a window in Magic Kingdom that says Iwerks stereoscopic, I think I had to say it, cameras of Iwerks, Don Iwerks, repairs, modifications, no two exactly alike. And that kind of goes back to the idea that they worked on the, now I'm trying to think of the word, I can't remember, the camera, the multiplane camera, for Walt Disney. And well, not they did, Ub Iwerks helped put the multiplane camera back in the, I believe it was the 1940s. So yeah. So for me, my first one is the Iwerks window on Main Street USA.
It's amazing to think that these guys had a role in Disney history and working with Walt himself, and in these incredible inventions like the multiplane camera that really broke open the world of animation and just changed it forever. I think they deserve the tributes that they get.
Yeah. And one cool thing about Ub Iwerks is that when Walt Disney lost all his animators to Universal Studios in the 1920s to Charles Mintz, the one animator they couldn't lure away from Walt Disney was Ub Iwerks. He stuck with him. He, you know, he was his friend. They stayed together. They created Mickey Mouse, and the rest is kind of history. So, yeah, they definitely deserve that window on Main Street.
Yeah, and I bet Walt really needed someone to be loyal to him during that time.
Yeah, because they, you know, I recently watched, I'm sorry, I'm going to go off on a little bit of a tangent, but the Walt Before Mickey movie, have you seen that?
I haven't.
So it stars the kid from, this is why I got annoyed a little bit. The kid who played on American Pie and was also in Rookie of the Year, when the kid becomes a baseball pitcher for the Chicago Cubs. They're two terrible movies. But anyway, this kid went on to grow up and he plays Walt Disney in a movie. And he's not a great actor. He's pretty wooden. The movie's not fantastic, but that part is in the movie, and they show that Walt back then was kind of a pompous, you know, like kind of jerk. Mm-hmm. And he kind of lost sight of what they were doing and what, you know, what was going on with his company and his animators. And that's how they kind of all got taken away from him. And I think Ub Iwerks was the guy who kind of called him on it and said, you know, I'll stay with you, I'll help you out, but you know, you got to change your ways. And it ended up, you know, changing the way Walt worked with his animators in the early days. So I don't know. I thought that was a pretty cool thing. Anyway, it's not a great movie. So I wouldn't recommend anybody to watch it, but it gave me a little bit of insight into their relationship at that time.
Yeah. Very cool. Good story, Phil. Okay, number two, over to me. So I'm going to go in the Magic Kingdom to Frontierland and Big Thunder Mountain. And we're going to talk for a minute about a character named Barnabas T. Bullion. So who's Barnabas? He's the founder and president of Big Thunder Mining Company. The Big Thunder Mining Company is the organization that gets the gold from Big Thunder Mountain. And Big Thunder Mountain doesn't necessarily like to give up its gold, but Barnabas sees it as his destiny to make this big strike. And if you go into Big Thunder, you will see a painting of Barnabas T. Bullion. And if you look at this painting, and if you know Disney Imagineers, you'll see that it kind of looks like a Disney Imagineer. In fact, it looks exactly like a Disney Imagineer. It looks like Tony Baxter. So Tony Baxter went to Disneyland when he was 8 years old. And Tony got a job at Disneyland back in the 60s. He started out scooping ice cream. He went to school at Cal Poly, and for his senior project, he did something very cool. He designed an attraction around Mary Poppins. He made some connections. He showed it to somebody inside the Disney company, and they said, hey, that's pretty interesting. And over time, he got a job, and he rose through the ranks of the Walt Disney Company up until the time when he was a senior vice president of creative development. And he held that job for many, many years. He was with the company for 47 years, and he worked on all kinds of projects. He worked on Star Tours and Splash Mountain, Indiana Jones Adventure. Eventually, he became a Disney legend back in 2013, and he received a window on Main Street USA and Disneyland. But one of the things that Tony worked on was Big Thunder Mountain. And so I think it's interesting when Disney recently reworked a queue of Big Thunder at Walt Disney World that they put a painting of Barnabas T. Bullion in there, and Barnabas looks like Tony. I think it's an amazing tribute to a guy who had a long and storied career with the company and really made a big impact.
Yeah, you know what's really funny is that I can't think of another Imagineer anywhere that has that kind of tribute, where like his face is on an attraction.
Yeah.
And when you look at the painting, there's no mistaking that it's Tony Baxter. I mean, there's no way you could look at it and be like, well, maybe it's him. No, it's him. Yeah. It's so clearly him. And I love the painting. I love the backstory they put in. I think it's such a cool tribute to him. And yet, from a guy who rode his bike to Disneyland when he was a kid, amazing story. Then he worked there, and he, like you were saying, scooped ice cream, nowadays Disney don't do any of that, the unsolicited ideas thing, right? Like, you're not going to, nowadays you can't show up at Imagineering with a model or a mock-up of an attraction you'd like and hand it to them, and no one's going to walk you through that door. But then back then that could happen.
Yeah.
And think about this guy, you know, grew up loving Disneyland, loving the Disney company, that is his project on, you know, for a Disney attraction, had, I think, a professor in college who really, really encouraged him to do this. And he walks in one day. I think the first couple times they were like, no, keep working on it. And then one day he gets the call up to work for Walt Disney Imagineering. That's such a cool story.
Yeah.
So, and you're right. He worked on some of the, and really designed some of the greatest attractions in the history of the parks. So, yeah, it makes sense to honor him like that. But I always think I get a kick out of the picture. I think the painting is really funny, and it looks, you know, it's his face. And I imagine somewhere in his house, I've seen his house, you know, there's been little clips of it here and there on Disney shows and specials, and it looks like it's Imagineering like heaven, like a museum. Like, guys like me and you would pay a really high ticket price to get in and just walk around and see the kind of stuff. Like, that's my Skywalker Ranch.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I would love to walk around his house. But I imagine that somewhere in one of his hallways, he has the painting of himself, the replica of the painting of himself in there.
Yeah, it's amazing the impact. And to think that you could start out back then just sort of, you know somebody, and you work your way up in the company, and a lot of people are still working their ways up in the company, but I think it was a very different time. It was a very different company then, and stories like that were probably a lot more common than they might be today.
Yeah, I remember hearing one, and I'm sorry to I don't want to rock the, you know, go off in a different direction here, but there was an Imagineer who got a job because he came up with the Firefly effect for the Pirates of the Caribbean in Disneyland. If you haven't been on the attraction, when you get on, you go around the Blue Bayou and there's these fireflies that are flying through the air. Well, they're not really, you know, fireflies. It's an effect this guy came up with, went to Imagineering in Glendale with it, showed them, and he got a job. That's that kind of stuff was really cool. And it's like the, you know, that the story that you can do anything, you know, you put your mind to, and they're saying you really can. And those guys, you know, I always have like these fantasies of me in my basement tinkering one day. And I'm like, wait a minute, if I put this light on this thing, it does this. I'm like, I'm going to take it to Imagineering and see if they want to buy this for me. And maybe I'll be an Imagineer, but it's probably not going to happen. I'm going to have to just settle for my Trader Sam's in my basement.
All you have to do, Phil, is invite the right person over to your basement or your garage now so that they can visit your edition of Trader Sam's, right? And they'll say, hey, nice job.
Do you have Tony Baxter's number or Marty Sklar or somebody like that? That's if I could find their numbers, I could get them to come over. I'm sure they would want to see it.
There you go. After a couple Nautilus drinks, that you're bound to have an offer.
They'll be signing me up. But yeah, that night, definitely.
Okay, that was number two. Number three, back to you, Phil.
All right, so I am going not very far. Again, I'm staying in the Magic Kingdom, heading over to Liberty Square and the Haunted Mansion, where there are really a ton of Imagineer tributes in that attraction. They're kind of all over the place. But a few years ago, when they put the extended queue in, that afforded them the real estate in the room to put in some new tributes. And one of the ones that I really like, well, actually, a bunch of the ones that I really like are because they're all Rolly Crump was one of the original guys who was tasked with working on the Haunted Mansion in the 60s before it had opened, before it was still a concept at that point. And he and Yale Gracie worked on the very early concepts for the Haunted Mansion, but not many of his of Rolly Crump's ideas actually made it into the Haunted Mansion, just a few. So they decided, Walt Disney decided, hey, listen, I really like your ideas. We're going to put all of your ideas in a separate attraction called the Museum of the Weird. And it was, you know, all these ideas and these spooky and creepy ideas that Rolly Crump came up with, they were supposed to get their separate attraction. Well, Walt Disney passed away. The Haunted Mansion ended up going to a couple other people. So a couple other Imagineers. So Rolly never got to make his Museum of the Weird, but a lot of the concepts and a lot of the ideas from his Museum of the Weird ended up in the queue, the extended queue of the Haunted Mansion. So on that, there's a crypt that you walk through, and there's a tribute to a bunch of the Imagineers that worked on the Haunted Mansion, but one of them is Rolly Crump, and it says, "While Brother Roland here reposes, his soul's above, one supposes." And I love that it's there. And after I interviewed Rolly on an episode of my podcast, I had the honor of interviewing him. He's really a living legend. I mean, a guy that he worked on Haunted Mansion. He worked on the Enchanted Tiki Room. He worked on It's a Small World for the World's Fair and then Disneyland. So he truly is. And he worked side by side with Walt Disney. And, you know, learned a lot of how he worked from Walt himself. So it was an honor talking to him. And that's why I wanted to make sure that I included his tribute at the Haunted Mansion in this list.
I think it's great that you had a chance to speak with him. And so he's been doing a lot of things recently, right? Books and other things like that.
Yeah. So his book, it's kind of a cute story, was written with a guy named Jeff Heim. I apologize, Jeff, if I'm mispronouncing your name. I believe it's Heimbluck is how you say it. And he tells, I guess he was a ghostwriter for Roland's story. So the book did so well in its original release that he did a couple sequels to it to tell more stories. I think it was like more cute stories that he did. He did a lot of, and he did a lot of them in audio. And he's also worked on a Museum of the Weird comic book, which is really cool. And you know, he's in his 80s and he's still completely with it. He's still doing things with, you know, making appearances and doing things with the company. So yeah, it was very, very cool to get to talk to him and hear what he was up to.
Yeah, very good. Well, actually, for my next one, I'm only going to go a few feet away, and I'm going to stay in the Haunted Mansion queue, and I'm going to look at another one of the tombstones that reads, "Master Gracie laid to rest, no mourning, please, at his request, farewell." And so it's the name that you mentioned worked with Mr. Crump. It's Yale Gracie. So interesting story about this tombstone. The official line, I think, is that the term master on the tombstone is meant to talk about a young man who's too young to be called Mr. So someone who's not the master of the house, but is a master in the sense of a young person. And even though I've heard that's the official line, and who knows if it's the official line, there's this common assumption that Gracie is the master of the mansion. And many people think that Gracie, this character Gracie, is the aging man who's in the foyer portrait, kind of a picture, a portrait of Dorian Gray sort of thing, who turns old as you're looking. Anyway, the story of the Haunted Mansion is an interesting one. Who knows what the real story is? I think it's a lot of different things. But Yale Gracie was a Disney Imagineer. He was a layout artist. He worked on Three Caballeros. He worked on Fantasia. He was a layout artist for Pinocchio. And he worked on a lot of special effects for Pirates of the Caribbean and Phil, like you said, Haunted Mansion. The Haunted Mansion character of Master Gracie was named after Yale Gracie. Yale Gracie retired in 1975. And really, there's a tragic ending to his story. Back in 1983, he and his wife were staying at a cabana in Bel Air in California, and someone came in and shot them. Nobody really knows why. There was no motive. There were no suspects. And he died a tragic death. But he really did leave a big impression on the Disney company. And I'm glad to see a tribute to him in the Haunted Mansion.
Yeah, I agree. And there was another cool story. There's one about Yale Gracie. I think it was, I'm 99% sure it was Yale Gracie. But if I'm wrong, you can edit this part out of the podcast. But there's a story that I remember hearing Roland Crump tell, that he went out to lunch one day and comes back, and there's Yale Gracie working on this effect. And he says, you know, "Roland, take a look at this. This is really neat." So he has this projector, like projecting this old vampire movie. And then he has a Beethoven bust sitting across the room. And he projects the movie onto the Beethoven bust. And it didn't fit perfectly, but it fit pretty well. And it looked like the Beethoven bust was singing and talking. And that's how they came up with the bust, the singing bust effect at in the Haunted Mansion. He just came up with it one day when Roland Crump was at lunch. Like he walked in, he was like, "I got this idea," and now they have it in, you know, Disneyland and the Magic Kingdom, and very, very cool. So it's amazing to see what these guys could do on a lunch break.
Yeah.
Me, I'm like trying to get a piece of pizza down my throat, and these guys are coming up with groundbreaking special effects. Pretty cool.
Yeah, it is, especially back in the day when the technology was so much simpler, and they had to take what they had and try to put it together and maybe stretch it to do things that people hadn't thought of before.
How cool is that? That they, you know, they used what they had. I remember reading that they had, you know, very simple kind of props and effects to work with, and they made just these amazing special effects out of it. It's very, very cool. Even like the Pepper's Ghost effect had been around for, you know, a century when they used it, and it's still one of the most popular effects in the Haunted Mansion. It's very, very cool.
Yeah, it definitely is. Okay, Master Gracie was number four. We're back over to you, Phil, for number five.
And again, Herb, I'm staying in the Magic Kingdom and not going all that far. I'm staying going over to Adventureland and Pirates of the Caribbean. Now, so when Disneyland's Pirates of the Caribbean was built, one of the main Imagineers that worked on a project was Mark Davis. And Mark Davis was, you know, he's a legend. He's famous for Pirates of the Caribbean, for Country Bear Jamboree, and a ton of other, you know, very, very historic and unique Walt Disney World attractions. Well, he was the one, he kind of had a nice, like a sense of humor, and he was like a good, really good sense of humor. And he was the one that kind of would inject like the playfulness into these attractions so they wouldn't be so serious. Like when you ride through Pirates of the Caribbean, yeah, it's a bunch of pirates, you know, sacking a town, but it's fun and it's funny and it's lighthearted and there's a fun song. And so it's a really cool thing. So, in order to kind of memorialize Mark Davis in the Pirates of the Caribbean, when the new Johnny Depp, Captain Jack Sparrow animatronics were added, I don't know how, geez, how many years ago was that? Is that this one? It was a while ago. But they, in the final scene, that's the trophy room scene, or the gosh, I'm having a hard day remembering words. Not the trophy room, the treasure room scene. There is Johnny Depp's Captain Jack Sparrow was sitting in a chair and singing the, you know, the drink got me hard as yo ho. Mm-hmm. And over his head, there's a sign that says Marco Deviso. And it's actually a crest with, you know, that has the family crest on it. And it says Marco Deviso, which is actually Mark Davis. So it's a kind of cool little hidden tribute to Mark Davis in that attraction. And I think that's the only tribute that they have to him in any actual attraction in Walt Disney World. So it's pretty cool that they put that in there.
Wouldn't it be neat to go through an attraction and see your name there, even if there were O's at the end of it? That would be amazing.
I've tried to, you know, bring a sticker and stick my name on certain attractions when I went through, but Disney always seems to have a problem with that, so I don't get to do it. Or how about the people that try to leave their, you know, loved ones' remains in the Haunted Mansion or something like that, right?
Yeah, and they end up in an HVAC someplace.
Yep, they end up, you're right, they end up backstage in a trash bag.
Yeah.
So don't do that, people, if you're listening to this.
Yeah, that's not where you want to end up. Yeah.
No.
Okay, that was number five. So last one, number six, over to me. So again, in the Magic Kingdom, I think we didn't get out of the Magic Kingdom today. And I'm going back to Fantasyland and a little spot that's kind of easy to overlook right across from Little Mermaid. And it says the sign up front, H. Goff Cartography. And so there is a shop which looks like it probably sells antique maps and maybe other things for ships. It's got a very interesting sign on the front that includes the globe and a sun and a moon that sort of create an interesting hidden Mickey. The location itself is actually a DVC sales location. But the sign and the name pay tribute to Harper Goff. So Harper Goff studied at the Chouinard Art Institute in L.A., where a lot of folks who got their start at Disney did. Back during World War II, he was working for the Army in their camouflage research facility. Who even knew there was such a thing in the Army, a camouflage research facility? But that's where Harper worked. After the war, he got a job for Warner Brothers. And he worked on some maybe not so well-known movies, but he got an interesting or made an interesting contact in 1951. He happened to be in London. He was in a model-making shop, and he wanted to buy a model train. And who came into that shop but Walt Disney? And they both wanted to buy the same train. And so that's how Harper Goff met Walt Disney. And he got a job there, and he is credited for working on a lot of things at Walt Disney World, including the live-action film 20,000 Leagues Under the Sea. So Goff did a lot of things with renderings and concept art, but I think it's fascinating that on the spot where the 20,000 Leagues Under the Sea attraction used to be in the Magic Kingdom, Disney put a tribute to him by naming a shop H. Goff Cartography.
You know, I never noticed that sign until you had mentioned it. I didn't know it was there. Mm. I never saw it. And then to look at it and now realize the significance of why that's there is, you know, it just shows you that how much thought Disney puts into all that stuff. It's like, the Nautilus inside the tree at Pooh's Playful Spot.
Yeah.
Like, 'cause that used to be across the way where 20,000 Leagues Under the Sea was. And of course, that was such a huge attraction. I took up a big, big footprint there in Magic Kingdom. But I never noticed it. I walked by that sign since New Fantasyland was built probably 100 times, and I never read it. And now I learned something today on the podcast, because I definitely didn't even know that was there.
Oh, well, good. I'm glad you did. And it's like we've talked about it before. It's these little details, I think, they're just fascinating, make you think, wow, people have spent a lot of time and energy putting this together. And the things that you see are there for a reason. And it creates an extra special experience you just don't get at other spots.
Yeah, you're right. And that came up. I'm sorry to kind of take this in a different direction, but I was talking with Steve Barrett, the guy who wrote all the Hidden Mickey books.
Yeah.
And he was talking about, you know, how hidden some of these Hidden Mickeys are and how hard it is to find them. And he's like, you know, you must have such a passion for what you're doing to put something like that into your project. Because, like, so many people aren't going to see it. Like, the Hidden Mickey, when you leave Journey of the Little Mermaid, I'm sorry, at Magic Kingdom, and you look to your right, and there's, like, five rocks that make up Steamboat Willie. Do you know the Hidden Mickey I'm talking about?
No, actually, I don't.
So, Herb, this Hidden Mickey is one of the most intricate Hidden Mickeys Disney's ever built. You have to look at these rocks at this exact angle. And they're, you know, there's one that's, you know, 6 feet from you, one that's 10 feet from you, one that's 12, and one that's like 14 feet from you. And if you look at them at the right angle, they all kind of make up a Hidden Mickey shape. And it's Steamboat Willie on the steamboat with the wheel in his hand.
Wow.
It's amazing. And I'm thinking about that. Like, how hard had that? That had to be almost impossible to design. Mm. But they do it. They put this stuff in there because they know people like me and you and like the listeners of your show are such big Disney fans that when they see that, it's going to be like that big aha moment. And it's just amazing that they do that kind of thing. It's just like these tributes that we're saying. It's incredible. And I kind of like when Imagineers, because they're not allowed to sign their work. So I kind of like when there are tributes put in there. Like they can't, like when Mark Davis did Pirates of the Caribbean, he could have, you know, on the way out, get a Sharpie and write, "Mark Davis made this attraction." It had to be anonymous. Like you're not supposed to, you know, you're going for the story, and it's all about the story that you experience on these attractions. So I'm glad that the future, you know, versions of Imagineers, the future generation, have gone in and put these tributes to these guys that, you know, made the parks what they are today. It's very, very cool.
Yeah, it is. And it helps us remember all of the blood, sweat, and tears that people put into making the parks a special place for us, and who really blazed a lot of trails in coming up with new technologies and playing on their lunch hours and taking movie skills and turning them into theme park skills. Just very cool that they've spent some time and energy paying tribute to the folks who helped to build it all.
Yeah, you're right. And so when Disney has another price increase and you're upset, it's because they had to have a couple new Imagineers put tributes to the old Imagineers in the park. So don't be upset.
Exactly. All right. Top six tributes to Imagineers in Walt Disney World. Number one, the Main Street USA windows to Ub and Don Iwerks. Number two, the president of the Big Thunder Mining Company to Tony Baxter. Number three, the Haunted Mansion extension queue to Rolly Crump. Number four, Master Gracie, tribute to Yale Gracie. Number five, the Pirate's Treasure Room to Mark Davis. And number six, H. Goff Cartography to Harper Goff. So, Phil, as always, fun list. If people are interested in getting a hand with a Disney World vacation, which can be a big and confusing job, and I know you do a great work in helping people through that, what's the best way for them to get in touch with you?
Yeah, thanks, Herb. Just stop over at eartothertravel.com. You can find a request, a free, no-obligation quote page over there, and you can just fill that out. It goes directly to me and no one else, and I'll get back to you really soon with, you know, with any kind of questions or with your quote.
And I understand that if you book a trip through Ear to Their Travel, you get a free Nautilus in Phil's garage.
That's, you know what? I hope it's like when it's completed, it is like the actual Trader Sam's. I want the line, you know, going to my front door and people waiting to get in. That's or I want to have a pager system. Herb, you and I were there before. We had to sit outside in that hallway.
Yeah.
With the pager waiting like a couple of, you know, like little kids from like for like 45 minutes and we can finally get into the building. That's what I want at my house. I want people sitting outside my house with pagers and my neighbors coming up all concerned, being like, what are you people doing out here? That's what I want.
The pager goes off as, ah, it's my turn. Yay.
Yeah. I have my 6-year-old working the door. So be like, yeah, you're gonna have to wait 45 minutes for a table. Sorry. my dad's watching the Eagles game downstairs. You can't come in.
Can't wait to see it. Okay.
Yeah, it's gonna be cool.
As always, thanks for joining me.
Yeah, thank you. It was a lot of fun.
Today we head out to the music of the Queue of Big Thunder Mountain Railroad, and yes, we have made it through the list of the top 6 Imagineering tributes in Walt Disney World, but our conversation isn't over. I'd like to hear what you think. You can chime in at the show notes page, worldofwalt.com/104. I'd like to invite you to follow me on social media, facebook.com/worldofwalt and pinterest.com/worldofwalt. If you like today's podcast, I would appreciate it if you would spread the word. Tell your family and your friends about it. To wrap up for today, as always, I would like to give you a heartfelt thank you for spending some of your time with me. I'd also like to thank everyone who visits the worldofwalt.com site, where you can read interesting Disney articles and chat with other folks who enjoy Disney in the forum and in the comments sections. By listening here and by visiting the site, you allow me to share the fun of Disney with you. And that is very, very cool. Thank you so much for being a part of it. So until next time, my friend, may God bless you.
So there's a great, big, beautiful tomorrow, shining at the end of every day. There's a great, big, beautiful tomorrow, just a dream away.